and welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is setting up SSL from client to IHS and plugin to WAS. Today's presenter is Harold Fanning. Harold is an advisory support engineer level 2 support for IHS web server, WebSphere plugin, and edge components in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. Harold's 31-year career spans several products like DPPX operating system and 17 years in development for communication server products, including OS2 and Windows. Since being in customer support, he has supported personal communications, host access transformation, the AST toolkit, IHS, WebSphere plugin, and WebSphere Edge products, including the load balancer. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Harold. You may begin.
Thank you, David. Again, my name is Harold, and this presentation, the title, I'd like to embellish a little bit. It's setting up SSL from the client to the IBM HTTP server or IHS web server, and going from the plugin, the WebSphere plugin, to the WebSphere application server. The concepts introduced in this would apply to any web server, but the example is going to use our IHS web server. So we generate a lot of calls regarding setting up SSL, and the confusion sometimes, or the omission that a lot of our customers have, is setting up sort of a two-tiered set of SSL parameters. So the purpose of this presentation is to explain setting up the SSL session, starting with the HTTP client to the IHS web server, and then jumping from the WebSphere plugin that routes to the SSL session up to the application server. Move to slide 2. So the agenda here is to discuss the secure socket layers from the client to the IHS web server and from the WebSphere plugin to the WebSphere application server. It's a two-part SSL configuration. I'll talk about some of the SSL terminology, because IHS web server uses something called a gskit with the KDB file, whereas the application server uses the Java SSE and the KeyStore terminology. And then we'll talk about how to set up the SSL from the client to the IHS web server. We'll talk about the KDB file and the stash files required for that IHS web server. And then we'll jump into the SSL session from the WebSphere plugin to the app server, and that'll get the entire SSL session configured, and then we'll talk about other type certificate issues like chain certificates, whether you have cipher negotiation configured or not, and then some tips and troubleshooting section of the presentation. Please move to slide 3. So before you begin, it's important to notice that you do not have a secure network connection until you've actually created the key for the secure network communication and then received that certificate from a certificate authority that is designated as a trusted certificate authority on your server. The SSL session from the client, part one will be the SSL session from the client to the IHS web server. With the configuration of the client to the web server, it's important to note that the web server plays the part of the secure socket server. Then the second part, and then so we'll talk about the client to the web server, where the web server is the SSL server, and its tooling that it uses to set up the SSL configuration is the iKeyMan GUI, which stands for the Interactive Key Management. And this iKeyMan GUI is supplied by the gskit that also gets installed, the IBM Global Security Kit. Then we'll go to part two, setting up the SSL session from the WebSphere to the plugin, WebSphere plugin to the WebSphere application server. It's important to notice that this part of the SSL configuration for the web server or the WebSphere plugin component is now the SSL client, and the app server is the SSL server, so he changes his role. And then we'll talk about the WAS admin console and the JSSE, the WAS uses the Java Secure Socket extensions to configure SSL. Please move to slide 4. I put this picture in here just to sort of show the dual role of the web server, because I think a lot of people miss this fact that we actually have two different SSL sessions. So I put this here to show that in the middle, the IHS web server is the server to the client, but when he switches gears over to the plugin, he becomes the client to the application server, and the application server is the SSL server for that handshake. So it's an important distinction to realize there's two parts to this configuration, which is sort of the main focus of this presentation. Move to slide 5. So breaking down some of the terminology, and I'm going to try to make it clear, some of this terminology is going to be generic to any SSL discussion. Some of it's going to be unique to the IHS and the GSCIT terminology, and some of it will be unique to the application server and the JSSE terminology on how they manage certificates. So start with the client. The client in a SSL handshake is the one who is going to receive a personal certificate from the server, and it's directional. The server is the other side of the handshake that will send down the personal certificate that must be verified by the client to bring up an SSL session. And what that server will send down is what's called the personal certificate. A personal certificate is unique to this host and assigned by a certificate authority. The signer certificate is that certificate authority's certificate, and there may actually be a chained set of certificates leading from the personal certificate to the intermediate certificates and finally down to the actual root certificate on who assigned the personal certificate. So now these next couple databases are unique to the IHS and the GSCIT. The iKeyMan uses a .kdb or key database file, and this holds both the personal certificates as well as the signer certificates required for an SSL connection. It's employed by IHS, and it is supplied by the IBM Global Security GSCIT. If you're wondering about the content of the actual certificates and the personal certificates, inside those personal certificates is where there's the discussion based on private keys and public keys, and the use of these keys provide the type of encryption algorithms that are used, but that's not part of this presentation, so I hope that won't be discussed here. So now, can you move on to slide 6? And to continue on the terminology, now these terminologies here are based on the JSSE implementation that the application server uses. They have the term called a key store, where the key store holds the personal certificates. The personal certificate is the key, the personal key. The trust store is what is the term they use for the database that holds the signer certificate, the signer of those personal certificates. And then there's other things that can be configured up there as well, like quality of protection. Quality of protection is optional, and it's used to configure other things like client authentication, which would result in mutual authentication between the client and the server, which means there'll be an exchange of certificates going in both directions. You can also configure the level of cipher that's required, and we have a discussion on cipher later, but the cipher is the cryptography settings that will define the level of security. A strong cipher can mean performance issues based on the math algorithms and things based on the cipher that it uses to encrypt that data and decrypt the data later on. So providing a strong, medium, weak, and custom selection of ciphers depends on your there's a trade-off between security and performance. The chain of trust is a term that's used to identify all the signers of a personal certificate, and this is what I was talking about, where you may look at a personal certificate and see that it actually has several intermediate certificates, eventually leading down to a root certificate. And we'll discuss how to determine whether it's an intermediate certificate or a root. So the Keystone TrustStar terms are used by the Java SSL extension, and they're terms for the corresponding repositories employed by the app server for the personal and signer certificates. The quality of protection is again based on a lot of optional configurations depending on the client authentication, whether it's required or not, and how deep the level of cipher is required. Move on to slide 7. I threw this chart in to show what you might see if you were actually reviewing a packet trace or something, what actually goes across the wire without getting into the bits and bytes. But I wanted this chart to show that there's actually a handshake going on, and the intent here is to show that there's a definite role between whether you're the client or the recipient or the server, or and who sends which certificate which way. So what you'll see is, like if you're looking at a Wireshark trace, you'll see that the client hello initializes the handshake, and the client hello is echoed back by the server hello. And then the server, note here that the server is the one that sends his personal certificate down to the client. Then optionally, if mutual or client authentication is configured, the client would also send his certificate, would he would send down a request for the client certificate as well. And then the key is actually exchanged from the server down to the client. So optionally, steps 7, 8, and 9 in here, the client might do the same thing back to the server, which means you'd have to have that whole configuration set up for clients, for personals, and signer certificates in order to go both directions. But again, client authentication or mutual authentication is not required. So a typical SSL session would just have the server sending down his certificate. And then in here, there would also be the levels of cipher that's been configured on both sides, and that's a negotiated thing in the handshake when they decide on what the highest level of encryption that they both are configured to support. That's the encryption that will be used when the SSL is completed. But this chart hopefully will show why you need to have those key stores and trust stores set up on both the client and the server in order to negotiate these certificates. We can move on to slide 8 now. So I want to start by setting up. These next few charts will be all about setting up the SSL session between that HTTP client and the IHS web server. So to do that, you would have to set up the SSL configuration within the IHS httpd.configuration.conf file. The config file, there's several directives that must be configured, as well as a virtual host to listen to the SSL port. The IBM GSKIP must be installed, and this is installed when you install the IHS web server itself, and it's installed in a local IHS directory from V7 on up. The IKEYMAN GUI is also required and installed with that GSKIP, and you'll use that IKEYMAN GUI to create the .kdb, the key database file, the request database file when you request personal certificates, in a stash file, where the stash file is the file that's used to store the password to be able to open up that KDB file at runtime. So the key.kdb is the default naming convention, and it's installed in the IHS install directory. And that's where you'll want to store the web server's personal certificate that'll be required by the client when he asks for the certificate. You need to request a personal certificate and then receive that personal certificate so that it's in the database when you then start the handshake. I also wanted to note here that prior to V7, in V6.1, the GSKIP that is used or installed, and when the IHS web server is installed, is a global installation, and it's not local to the IHS. This is key because sometimes you'll be asked what version of GSKIP you have installed. And you want to make sure that you drive down to the right directory when you do the GSKIP verge command to find out which version you have installed. In 6.1, it's a global installation under, like in Windows, it would be Program Files IBM. And in 7.0 and above, we have a local copy that we install ourselves. It's interesting because if you have different applications that require Gscit, that may be you may have to keep track of what versions actually installed. So the Gscit 7 per command in V7 and above is global. Even if it's globally installed, the Gscit installed is not used by IHS, but it's used by the local IHS install directory. So if someone asks you for the Gscit 7 version, make sure that you get the right path. And we can move on to slide 9 now. So slide 9 is to actually start with the iKeyman GUI. You need to create the KDB file itself, and there's a default KDB file, which is the key.kdb. So you create this database file and certificate needed for the authentication to the web server during the SSL handshake. The iKeyman GUI, which is included with the IHS installation, can be used to create the key database. This is needed to store the personal certificate and the signer certificates required by the client browser using an SSL handshake. That's if you had both directions. So this screen capture that I put in here is to create the password. And you'll notice that it has a couple of boxes here. We want to make sure that we always create the stash file when we create the IHS KDB file, to stash the password, because the IHS, being a runtime, he can't prompt the user for the password, so he'll need the stash file to know the password of the KDB file when runtime comes along and he needs to open it up and pull the certificates. Also note the expiration box. It's recommended that you not check the expiration because you might not want to keep track of when this password is going to expire for getting into the KDB file. So unchecked will mean there's no expiration. I mean, if you have some need to keep track of the expiration, you could check the expiration box and then keep track of the number of days before that password expires. Please move on to slide 10. So once we've created the KDB file, first thing we need to do is to build a request database to request a personal certificate. We do this in order to build a request for a certificate authority, and that's an authority that will actually create the personal certificate and the list of signers. So iKeyman gives you a vehicle to go in and create that file that needs to be then sent to the certificate authority. Personal certificate must be returned, must be received by the same host and by the same file, and that's because the certificate will be assigned based on the host name and IP name that belongs to the IHS web server. The request is actually IP-based and must match the machine of the IP, whatever your DNS resolves that host name to be. So once we made the request, we can move on to slide 11. And when the request comes back, we're going to go back into that KDB file, and we're going to go first and install the signer certificates that come back from the certificate authority. And we'll have to receive any of the signers in the chain for the personal certificate. And your certificate authority shall give you directions on what those certificates are that need to be in the signer. So with the KDB file, you have this drop down here on what type of certificate you're receiving. So this screen capture here is showing you the signer certificates that need to be received. So the bullets that are interesting here is that this is where you would add a signer certificate, or perhaps you need to extract a signer certificate to move to another KDB file. If it's already in the list, you can extract it from here. The populate button is the well-known certificate authorities, and I'm not sure at what point in time, but at one point in time, it was always populated with well-known certificate authorities. Now it is not. The signer list is not populated unless after you create the KDB file, you come in here and actually populate it with well-known authorities. Depending on where you get your personal certificate, it may not be one of these well-known authorities, and you may have to actually install the intermediate or signer certificates based on your certificate authority's personal certificate that he sends back to you on the request. So this is setting up the signer certificate. Now move on to slide 12. And now we change the drop down on slide 12. Just a minute. I apologize, I just timed out. So now we changed the drop down here to go to the personal certificate list instead of the signer certificate list. So this is where we're actually going to receive that certificate that your certificate authority sent to you. So here is where we're going to either do a receive, provided this RDB was from this file. So you made the request from here and you would receive it from here. You could also import it if you brought it over from another KDB file. So in order to get the personal certificate here, you would import it or receive it into the personal certificate in the KDB file. This is for the client to the IHS. This is the personal certificate that IHS is going to send down to the client when the handshake is initialized. And that your browser would then have to have that signer in his list to accept the certificate. Move on to slide 13. So that's what has to be done in the KDB file. And now here's the actual HTTP.conf file, some of the directives that need to be added to set up an SSL session. So these are the sample directives that must be there. I put the listen in there for 443. 443, of course, is the default SSL port. Could be any port. And then you have a virtual IP, a virtual host stanza for that, whatever your particular SSL port is, in this case 443, and it could be any IP address, and it could be any port, as long as within this virtual stanza you then set up the SSL. So it's a scope thing. The SSL has to be set up within the virtual host for that SSL port, and you'll need to configure the server name, which is the fully qualified name required to match the SSL to the site name and the host name or site name to get the right certificate. You'll need, of course, say SSL enabled. And then the SSL cert name could be, if you have multiple host names within IHS and you want to use a particular certificate for this host name, which might be different than, you know, name X, Y, Z in each virtual host stanza if you had multiple virtual hosts within IHS listening. Then outside of that virtual host, you would then disable the SSL. So note that the scope is global. Scope is global to the host and the virtual host stanza. So within and without the virtual host stanza, you have to set up your SSL or non-SSL. And the fully qualified name here is something that must resolve to the IP that the certificate was originally requested for at the time that the certificate request was made. Please move to slide 14. Here's some additional SSL directives that are optional, and I realize now that I put down the SSL server cert on both pages. I guess I think that's important. The label, again, matches them if you had multiple certificates and you wanted to make sure each virtual host sent out the right certificate. The SSL client authentication is what I talked about back when we saw the handshake chart, where it could be a mutual authentication where the client and the server both exchange certificates. This is where that would be configured here on an IHS configuration. So SSL CipherSpec is a way of limiting the good, better, best, the stronger and weaker encryption cipher algorithms. And there's a list of these in the Info Center, but you can configure to restrict only accept this particular level of cipher here. Otherwise, we would. There's a whole list of ones that IHS supports mentioned in the Info Center, and he would go down through the list right down through the null or the weakest cipher. In here, you can also set up the SSL timeouts. Secure socket layers based on a history of standards. You know, this is all from the IETF or the Internet Engineering Task Force, RFC 2246, where there's these different protocols over time based on the history. Version 2 was first updated to version 3 and finally to TLS, the transport layer security as well. So we have these timers depending on what level of SSL you're using. There are minor differences between TLS 1.0 and SSL 3.0, but they're not interchangeable, so you would have to determine which one you're going to use, and that both parties in the SSL handshake support that same standard. So at this point, we can pause, and at this point, we should be able to test and make sure that our SSL is set up correctly between the client and the IHS web server because we've set up the SSL personal certificate. So to do that, what you would do is maybe open a browser up and hit the default port, something like my https://, my IHS hostname, :443, and I should get the splash screen. If I get the splash screen, then we know that the certificate was exchanged between IHS and that client browser, and the browser accepted based on he already had some signer in his list of trusted authorities to accept your personal certificate. Or he may prompt you. A browser will prompt you and say, look, I don't know who to sign this guy. Do you trust him or not? And then you can trust him as a temporary connection, or you can actually say, I not only trust him, I want you to add his signer to your trusted signer list, and then you won't be prompted after that. So that takes care of setting up the SSL between the client and the IHS web server. We move to slide 15. So now I want to move to setting up the second part of the presentation, which gets missed out on a lot, and that's where you now have this plugin, WebSphere plugin component that gets installed on the IHS web server to route you over to the WebSphere application server. Now, in this case, we're going to be the client to the application server. The first panel I put in here is it required? And I put that in there because sometimes it's not required. If, for example, your IHS web server is co-located with your application server or they're in the same DMZ and protected, you may not be so concerned about running SSL sessions all the way up and the expense of having that. Of course, in the initial connection comes up, you got the handshake. But then after that, you have all the encrypted and decrypted algorithms to go back and forth. And if you're in a protected environment, you may not need that. So I put this chart in here to let you know that you don't have to have HTTPS transports up to the WAS. The plugin will downgrade to a normal HTTP transport and send it on up to the application server. So it may be okay depending on what your environment is, you're in the same DMZ or the same physical server. So to do that, you could go into the admin console, go to your servers, app server, server ports, and in there would be the default host secure port that you could associate with this transport. So you could select that transport and actually unselect the enable box, and you wouldn't have to worry about the SSL session between the plugin and the app server. But any changes made to the HTTPS transport on the WAS admin console will require you to regen or repropagate that plugin and push it down to the plugin config.xml at that web server. The plugin KDB and the plugin SDH file must be pushed down as a separate process. So any changes that are made will need to be pushed down from the app server to the web server's plugin. We move on to chart 16. So here's a screen capture of that panel that I talked about that you get to by going from the application server to your server name to the web container transport chains. And this is the HTTP queue inbound default secure. Note the word secure. So this is the panel that says, here's where I care about my SSL channel up to the app server. So this is where the enable box could be turned off. This is one way to disable the HTTP transport. So note that this panel is for HTTPS and not HTTP. You would also have a transport for HTTP, but because of the default secure path, you know that this is for the secure HTTPS secure session. You could also just go to the HTTPS secure ports and remove the port, but this is a way to just enable the HTTPS. So we can move to slide 17. So the point of this presentation, of course, is when HTTPS is required, and we do want to set up the SSL between the plugin to the app server. So to do this, we're going to go to the WAS admin console, and we're going to configure the plugin-key.kdb. This is installed by default when you have that HTTPS transport, and it is configured. The WAS has a personal certificate with a self-signed certificate already seated in that file. So you would populate the signer list with the signer certificates and the trusted certificates of the one received from the personal certificate assignment. So now we're going to go up to the admin console. So please move to slide 18. So here again, this is to show that the plugin itself is actually installed on the web server, but it's configured on the admin, the WAS application server admin console. So here's where I put these down here because we want to be careful about getting tripped up on the terminology we talked about before, where IHS is going to use a GSCIT terminology and the app server is going to use the JSSE terminology. So in other words, like a key store on the app server is where he puts his personal certificates, and the trust store is where he puts his signer certificates. But we're actually going to end up building one pluginkey.kdb file. And we already know from the IHS exercise that it's the KDB file that has both personal and signer certificates in that KDB file. So I wanted to show that on the IHS side, you'll have the plugin configuration XML file. You'll have a pluginkey.kdb and a pluginkey.sth. Again, you have to have a stash file when you create that KDB file that's going to be pushed down, because IHS needs to be able, or IHS when he runs the plugin component, will need to be able to open that plugin KDB in order to pull the personal, the signer certificates out when he has to verify the application server's personal certificate. So up in the web server application server, we're going to go through an exercise where we go look at his node default key store and his node default trust stores, so that we know what to be able to pull down to the plugin KDB file. Please move to slide 19. So I put this chart in because we had a lot of PMRs open on this, and I'm going to go back to the web server itself. Now, when the web server is actually, when the plugin is installed on the web server, there is a web server plugin KDB file and a plugin stash file. It's a default placeholder, so to speak, that's built during the install process. It really doesn't have any of the configuration options or things from the admin console because nothing's been pushed down yet. So I just wanted to bring the attention, because we see this a lot where the KDB file has not been pushed down from the apps, from the admin console, and the default KDB file that we built for the plugin key actually had an expiration on 4/26/2012. And that password will need to be updated. The expire date will need to be expanded. It has a default password of WebAS, and it has a personal certificate in the KDB file that also is expired, but is only required if you had the client authentication set up where the app server was also asking for a personal certificate to be sent up from the plugin, which is, again, not too common. And it's only required if you have mutual authentication configured in the admin console. But this is not the it's not the same KDB that IHS was using. It's the plugin key.kdb. Remember, the IHS had a KDB file called the key.kdb. So So this is the plugin key.kdb file that we're building now. It could be the same KDB file, and a lot of customers will set them up to have only the one KDB file. But then you need to keep track of whether you're using it as a IHS web server to the client or a plugin client to the WAS app server. So it's architected to be two separate KDB files. The key.kdb belongs to IHS. The plugin key.kdb belongs to the plugin. And it's all based on because we're changing our roles from client, from server to client. So again, this slide here is showing you what's actually installed during the installation. This is the default. But once you do anything at the admin console, like mapping or anything like that, and you want to build a new config file, you would push it down, and this would no longer be an issue. So I just wanted to put it in there for completeness. So you can move to slide 20 now, please. So now we're moving on to the app server. And on the server machine, there's a repository that holds the plugin config, XML, the config files, the KDB, and the stash file. So think of it as having a repository or a copy on the app server that we will then need to be where we can build it through the admin console, and then eventually when we get it built, we're going to be pushing it on down to the web server because they're not necessarily in the same box. So Webster as a 7.0 and up will pre-build all this key file stuff for you for the plugin, and it sets up the plugin KDB file to have a personal certificate. A signer certificate that was used to sign the app server's personal certificate, so that plugin key.kdb file will already have the correct signer certificate that belongs to the application server's personal certificate, so that the SSL session will complete. So this is all because you have the HTTPS transport defined on the app server. So by default, it will configure the plugin SSL using the key file and stash file shipped with WAS. And again, the password to that is WebAS. And they will need to be pushed down, as we'll see in the next couple of slides. So we can move now to slide 21. So this is where the slide I put in here shows you how to get to the plugin properties where you would actually do the push the key store down. This is where we would push the plugin key.kdb file and stash file down to the corresponding web server. So this is where you would do it. This is where you go to push down from the admin console to wipe out that installed one that's just sort of a default placeholder. This will pull it from the admin console repository we talked about that's been updated and built with all the correct WAS signer certificates and push it down into this web server where the plugin is installed and replace that plugin key.kdb and plugin stash. And it uses that based on, and not point of this presentation, but just if you're wondering, for managed nodes, he's going to use a node agent to do that. For unmanaged nodes, he's going to use the IHS admin agent to do that. And if he's locally or installed together, co-located, he just moves the files over into the IHS install directory path. We'll move on to slide 22. So I put this slide in there, and I probably should have changed the title a little bit. You probably wouldn't do this manually, but you could. But really, I put this chart in here so that you could verify, like a lot of times you'll get a call from service saying, can we go verify that you're using the HTTPS transport? So I'll put these lines in here. This is what you'll see in the XML file, config.xml file. And if this transport exists, then you know you have the HTTPS transport defined, and then you have an SSL session, which means you have to have a valid plugin key.kdb and a valid plugin key.stash. And this will echo, these directives will echo the path that you need to take if somebody says, well, we're having trouble with our certificates, they must be expired or something like that. So this is where you would find the path to the plugins, KDB and SDH file. Move on to chart 23. So remember, here the plugin is the client and the WAS is the server. Therefore, the WAS presents its personal certificate to the plugin, and the plugin will have to verify that personal certificate with the signers that he has in his list. So the plugin must have the signer that matches the SSL signer of the WAS personal certificate. And the plugin key.kdb may have a signer certificate, may have to have more than one signer certificate if you have scaled up to the point where you have several WebSphere nodes. Each node will have its own certificate, and the plugin will need to have the signer for all of those so that it can verify whichever backend server he picks out of the cluster. The plugin XML could be updated to use the same KDB file that IHS, but it's strongly discouraged. We already talked about that. So move on to slide 24. So the first part of this exercise is to identify the personal certificate of the application server or the JVM of the web server that is in the cluster for that web server for that plugin. Then we need to find the signer for that JVM. So to do that, we would go to this is the path. Here I put down the path on how we would go to find out the personal certificate in case it's been updated, or you just need to verify that you have the correct certificates in your files. So in order to find out if we have the right signer, we have to first find out what the personal certificate is that JVM is going to use. So I put down in here the path you would take if you were in the admin console. You know, you go to security, SSL certificate, key management, manage endpoints, pick the node, the WAS node. Now, this is the WAS node that is going to be on the other side of the plugin, so the server side. And then you want to go to his key store to find his personal certificate. And then when we get to his key store, we want to go to that default key store and find the personal certificate. We go to chart 25. So this is what it looks like, a screenshot of when you get to the certificate. And this is his personal certificate, and you notice it's in the key store. So what's nice about this display is it shows you on the bottom line who the signer is of that default personal certificate. So now we have a serial number and a signer name, a connection name, for the signer certificate that we now need to now go back and go find that signer so that we can get that down to the plugin. And you would also see if there was chained certificates here as well. The personal certificate is always the first thing, and then there might be some intermediates, and then finally down to a root certificate. So now we have a serial number and we have a signer certificate. So now we can go from the key store. Now we want to go to the trust store, but we want to go to the trust store that belongs to the plugin so that we can add that signer. I'm sorry, I jumped the gun. We found out who the signer is. Now we need to go and extract it. I got ahead of myself. Sorry. So we're going to find out. This is the signer certificate. Now we need to go to that node trust store so that we can pull the signer certificate and extract it so that we can later add it to the plugin. So we go to slide 26. And that's all I've done here, showed you the extract button. And when you do the extract, he's going to ask you where do you want to put this ARM file, and you'll just give it some name that you understand and click OK and go back to the endpoint security configuration page. So what we're doing here is moving the signer out of the trust store for the node of the JVM, and we're going to move it over to the trust store for the plugin. So go to page 27. So now, to make sure you're in the right place, we need to find the node that belongs to the web server definition. You can look inside the node and expand until you see your web server name there, and you'll know you're in the right node. And once you identify the correct node, you can then go into his key store, and the certificate's on the right side. Click on the CMS key store. This is the link that this is the CMS key store type is the link that makes it a plugin key.kdb file. And then we're going to go into those signer certificates in order to receive that into the signer list for the plugin KDB. Go to slide 28. So this is where you end up if you had done the what I verbally spoke about. You go to the SSL key management, manage endpoints, go to the web server, go to the key store for that web server, and go to the CMS key store. Now, what's interesting here is I'm saying key store, but I'm actually adding the signer from the trust store. And this is because the plugin, again, is using that KDB file that has both personal and signers in the KDB file. So that's how we accomplish that here. So you have to remember the alias that you set up, and you say okay, and you can add it here. So we're going to add the signer certificate for the app server's personal into the plugin's signer list. Go to page 29. And then we'll save the changes, and we'll have to go back to that page again from the web server plugin properties and push that new key store down to the web server's plugin key.kdb and stash file. So we'll, and then that, this is different than the actual propagate. Here we're pushing the key file and the stash file, and we'll also want to regenerate and repropagate the plugin itself, the plugin XML file. Let's move to slide 30. So this again shows you when you get done with all that, again, another picture of how we now pushed into the plugin config.xml file the path to this transport for the SSL ports. And he also has the path to the key KDB and the stash file. So again, we can go in there and confirm that this thing was built correctly. And this needs to manually be pushed each time you change that. There's no, as far as I know, there's no automatic way to push the KDB file. And then when you do push those down to the plugin, you know, the IHS web server also has to be stopped and restarted to pick up any changes in the config file. Now move to page 31. So, again, the point of this presentation is not really to discuss the cipher negotiation itself and all the math that's involved, but I just put this in here to indicate that there are built-in cipher specifications that are defaulted and used between the client and the server for SSL, and you can configure your cipher negotiation based on what you put into the httpd.conf file. Will tell you what level of weak or strong cipher negotiation that you're going to use for that session. So this is just important to note that it's a part of the handshake, and if the client and the server, whether that be the browser to the IHS or the plugin to the WAS, they both must support at least some common cipher level of negotiation, or the SSL handshake will also fail. And the Info Center, again, gives a list of all the ciphers that are supported. I don't know the list. Move to page 32. Now I move on to tips and troubleshooting. This first page I put in here to show that there are intermediate certificates. So if I pull up a personal certificate, and this is done through Windows Certificate Viewer, I can then see that there's a certificate path. You notice that the personal certificate drives all the way down to an actual root certificate. So this particular personal certificate had two intermediate certificates and a root. And all of those certificates in that path would need to be in the signer list to verify that personal certificate. So you would install those in your signer list based on the root first, and then each intermediate that's required to have the signer already in the list. If that makes sense. In other words, if my root is A, A signs B, I have to have A in there first, then I can put B in there. B signed C. Okay, I have to have B in there before I can put C in there. So I have to have that pecking order of change certificates from the personal all the way down to the root in the signer list. And this is the way to look at that certificate and see that there's actually change certificates before you get down to the actual root certificate for that personal. Move to slide 33. So I put this in here to show how do you know you've gone all the way down to the root certificate? Well, the root certificate is one that's issued and signed by itself. So it's a self-signed certificate. So this shows a CA root certificate, but you notice the red X is not a trusted certificate. So to correct that, you'd have to add this particular CA signer to the list in the browser that says, I don't trust this root certificate. So this was probably a self-signed test certificate that is not a known root. So remember we had the populate list of well-known trusted authorities? This is saying, I don't know who this is, but you know, in your environment, you may say, yeah, that's one that I created internally or in-house, and I do trust this. So it's showing here that this certificate is not trusted, but you could put it in. You notice that it is a root certificate or a self-signed certificate, and you could put it into your signer list and say, we now trust this guy from now on. So I intentionally put the one in there that failed to show you that, okay, here's a root certificate, but not all root certificates may be pre-populated in your list. And you'll have to go add that to the signer list. Go to page 34. So some of the things we talked about was your KDB passwords, and that's for both the key.kdb belonging to IHS as well as the plugin key.kdb. Be aware that the passwords can expire. They were created without with that box checked for expiration dates, and you have to go in there and change the expiration when they time out. A SAN certificate is a subject alternative name, and it lets you protect multiple host names with a sort of a wild card type certificate, if you will, so that you don't have to get bogged down on matching every one of the IPs that belong to that certificate. And I guess that's a scope or a scale thing you may consider. I think it costs a little more money, but it gets around having unique signer certificates for everybody. And I talked about as you go along setting up the certificate, it's probably a good idea to break it down in those two pieces like I did my presentation so that you know that the HTTPS to the web server is working correctly first before you then go adding the back-end app server so that you know the certificate and the KDB file is built correctly by hitting that default port going straight to the IHS hostname. And then you could actually, on the other side, make sure that if you're not sure who the who the WAS app server is using as his personal certificate, you could hit his SSL port directly with maybe a browser using the WAS server name, and then you can actually display that certificate that he's using as a personal certificate. A good chance your browser may pop up saying, you know, here's a certificate. Do you trust it? Do you want to put it in? And you can take a look at the certificate. Or if it's already in there and already trusted, you can then just pull it out of that. Most browsers have somewhere where you can go and look at the certificate for the existing session. And then you can find out who his personal certificate is. And that's a good way to find out that you have the right one all built within the plugin or not. If it's not the certificate you put in the plugin, then you're going to a different back-end JVM server. Maybe you missed being part of the cluster or something to that effect. Okay, and then the last bullet there, if you receive a message that says all the signers must be in the KDB, that's probably because you have a chain certificate and all you put in was the root, or maybe all you put in was the intermediate. I'm not sure if you can put in the intermediate without getting the signer of the intermediate in as well. So it's more likely you forgot the intermediate certificate and all you did was put in the root certificate, and there happens to be some chained in between the personal and that. So he's saying, I don't have everything in the list for this personal certificate, so you have to go back there and put those in. You go to slide 35. Key size has changed depending on over time, again, over history. So I just wanted to show here that the IKEA GUI down in the IHS has the ability to change that key size by doing a drop down. A lot of them require a key size of 2048 now. Go to chart 36. There are other tools that you can use too. There are, like, the OpenSSL is a good tool for converting certificates, pulling them from other key files like maybe Apache or something like that, and converting them to PK12 files so that you can import them into the IHS KDB file. Windows, I showed you that one view where Windows has that certificate viewer that comes up, and in there he allows you to extract a .sir file, and you could extract it and convert it and move things around that way by using the Windows certificate viewer. Move to slide 37. So here's what a self-signed certificate looks like within IKEMAN. If you're looking to see if it's a personal certificate that's self-signed certificate, you notice that it's the issued to and the issued by are the same. And you see this is the personal certificate. It would also be the signer certificate, right, because the personal certificate is signed by itself, so it has its own root. So this would have to be exchanged in both the personal as well as the signer on both machines, if that makes sense, because one side's going to look at it as a personal, the other side's going to look at it as a signer. So you would have to extract this, send it over, bring it in as a signer. So that's obviously not a well-known. It's a self-signed certificate used in testing and things like that a lot. Not really recommended, but okay for a test environment. Move to page 38. This shows you within the IKEMAN GUI again that we talked about. If you did not, leave the box checked that says the password can expire, the IKEMAN does give you a way to display that password expire and change the password. So any of the newer GSKITs will allow you to change that password if you have the password expired problem that shows up with your KDB file, and that's true for the IHS KDB or the plugin KDB. Go to slide 39. So we have a tech note that talks about this too. If you're trying to move from SSL, that like from an Apache, and you're trying to migrate from one to the other, and you need to convert those certificate types. OpenSSL allows you a way to convert that to a P12 file, and from the P12 file you can then receive it by changing the format type in the IKEMAN GUI and receive it into the IHS KDB file. And I put a link, reference to the link here, because certificates can be all there are several different types of certificates, PKCS12, and there's also the SIR. All these different type encoding rules on how they show the certificate itself. So for our KDB, it's got to be a CMS KDB file, and it has to receive the PKCS12s. And you may actually have an issue with the policy file here when you try to include that. Once you convert it and convert it over, we have another tech note that's linked off of this one that talks about how to change the policy file to allow those type certificates to be installed. Go to page 40. So in summary, we talked about that SSL is a two-part SSL configuration. You have the client to IHS, and then you have to turn around and do it from the plugin to the app server. We have two different terminologies. IHS is a GSKIT and a KDB file, and the WAS uses the Java, JSSE, and the key store. SSL from client to IHS sends the personal certificate. The web server will send the personal certificate down. When you're the plugin, the app server sends the personal certificate down to the plugin. You must have the KDB stash files so that the runtime can open the files. Okay, and then this bullet says, and when you're plugging, you do the opposite. I already said that when I talked to the second bullet. And you must have the entire chain. If there's a chain of certificates for that signer list, you can negotiate different levels of cipher negotiation. And the IBM's SSL is not OpenSSL as used in Apache. We get that a lot, question a lot. Ours is the GSKIT or the Java JSSE. So with that, I would like to, I guess page 41 is the references, and I would like to go ahead and turn the presentation back over to David.
Thank you, Harold, for a great presentation. And slide 42 has some additional WebSphere product resources that we hope you could find useful. Don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject WSTE Subscribe to get a list of mailing lists and to subscribe. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled, or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program even better for you. Thanks again for your participation. Moving on to the Q&A session, I would like to remind you that for those of you who join us via the web conference, you can also post your questions in the group chat. Precedence will be given to questions asked through the phone, and if time permits, we will also address questions in the group chat. At this time, Marcella, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Long. Gentlemen, at this time, we've had no one queue up. There's one right now. Just a moment. Stephen Ma from IBM Canada.
Yep.
Go ahead, sir.
I have two questions related to slide four. As we mentioned, there are two sessions. So are they related to each other or they are separate sessions? I mean, if a client connected to web server with HTTPS, so the plugin will also use HTTPS, or it's not mandatory? The second question is for the plugin. Normally, a plugin config.xml has both HTTP and HTTPS transport config. So how does plugin know which transport to use to connect to WebSphere?
Let me go with the first question. It kind of depends, and that was kind of the point of the presentation, was to say that you can set it up to use the same transport all the way through. So they're separate sessions, the client to the HTTPS to the server. And then the plugin is the one that goes through the logic to say, how do you want me to pass this on up to the app server? So it's the plugin that would then say, do I also have an HTTPS transport? Yes, I do. Then you want me to send this up as HTTPS as well. Right? But he doesn't have to. He could go into his plugin XML and say, oh, I don't have an HTTPS transport. Therefore, I'll downgrade to HTTPS and send it up on HTTPS. So that was the point of the first couple of charts that said you, I don't know why you would, but you could remove it. One reason would be for performance, right? If you had maybe a co-located web server or within the same DMZ, you may not want the expense of running the HTTPS transport on up to the app server.
So if a client uses HTTP, although a plugin has HTTPS and HTTP, so plugin will also prefer to use HTTP first?
No. I'm saying that the plugin does not have to have both transports.
Okay.
You're saying it does, and that's true. It does. But you can remove HTTPS. And if you remove it, then he'll downgrade it to HTTP between the plugin and the app server. Client doesn't know that happened. Client's going HTTPS to the web server. Is that clear?
Since most of the people are not removed the HTTPS.
Right. Most of the time, the plugin would say, you came in HTTPS, I have HTTPS, I'll send you on up as SSL as well.
Okay. You mean if a client uses HTTPS, so a plugin will try to HTTP first? If not available, then downgrade to HTTP?
Correct. Yeah. If HTTPS is there, we'll use that first.
Okay. Yeah, the first question is clear.
And the plugin, you know, he knows that from matching it up, right? When he comes in, he says, match the URI, match the host name. Okay, go up to that host name, and in there I have a transport or I don't have a transport. I'll pick the port based on the transport.
Okay, so it will match first.
Right.
If not match, then downgrade as well, right?
Right.
Okay, thanks.
If anyone else would like to queue up at this time, please press star 1 and record your name. You'll be announced into conference. We have no one else in queue. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcella. We do have a couple questions in the group chat. And the first one is regarding slide 15. You said that SSL between plug-in and WAS is optional if you are on the same physical machine. Isn't it possible to trace the HTTP traffic between plug-in and WAS via TCP dump? Localhost should appear in TCP dump.
I'm not sure the answer to that. I assume it's per OS. If you're talking about Linux and but the idea here is that, yeah, if you're going to turn on trace, I mean then you must have access to this protected box. So are you worried about somebody turning on trace and reading unencrypted data? You know, he's got his paws on that box to begin with. I mean, the idea was if you had a protected box and no one's going to be able to get to that box, it's in the DMZ or whatever, then it may not be a concern. But if it is a concern, you just leave the transport in there and do the plug-in SSL from the plug-in to the app server. So I hope that answered it.
Okay, thank you. And then another question in the chat session. Asking about the relation mapping between key.kdb and plugin.kdb, I believe that's probably also related to slide 4 that you just talked about again.
Right. And the point here is there really is not a relationship. There are two different KDB files. One is for setting up the client to the IHS, which is the key.kdb, and the other is a separate KDB file that the plugin uses to do the handshake with the app server. And I did say that they could be the same, but it gets kind of sticky when they're the same because you got to be careful of the paths. One path is in HTTP conf file, one path is in the plugin XML file, and if you change one versus the other, you may lose track of your files. So they could be the same, but they're not necessarily the same.
Okay, thanks. And then the next question in the chat is, For mutual authentication, where WAS is both server and client, does the certificate need to be added to the IHS or the plugin?
Wait a minute. I didn't see that question. Say that again.
It was sent just to the Q&A group. You don't
know. Okay.
For mutual authentication, where WAS is both the server and the client, certificate needs to be added to the IHS or plugin.
Plugin. You're talking about mutual authentication there. You're talking about plug-in to WAS.
Right.
Now, the IHS could also configure mutual authentication to the client. So the question really is on both steps. But if you're talking about the client authentication at WAS, then the WAS would have to know the IHS signer.
Okay. Thank you. And then another question. If we are using a different web server, do we need to install gskit?
The plugin. You're required to have the plugin, and the plugin will have the gskit.
Right. Thanks. And then another question. If both HTTP and HTTPS transports are in the plugin, will it automatically attempt HTTPS first? And you've already answered that, I believe.
Right. And the question really is how did it come in, right? It's going to match whatever came in.
Right. Okay, thanks. And I see one more question at this time. If WAS certificate is expired, then should propagating the plugin on HTTP server resolve the issue, or must it be added, or must it be added, add a signer explicitly to CM store?
you have to go through the exercise explicitly. There's nothing automatic about updating the certificates. So you'd, okay, have to, you'd have to update it and push it down.
Okay, thank you. I don't see any other questions in the group chat. Marcella, are there any more questions on the phone?
Yes, one more. Brent Morris, your line is open.
Yes, first of all, thank you for tackling a very tough subject, and I just appreciate your slide deck and answering these questions. Second of all, it used to be a huge issue regarding WAS and folks self-signing certificates, considering that same certificate was out on every copy of WAS, and then somehow that would get populated into production. Are you still seeing that with the later versions of WAS being an issue with your clients?
WAS stepped up to a new protocol, a new the architecture protocol. What they do now is they still have a self-signed certificate, but it's signed by a self-signed root, if that makes sense. They have a, I should say that differently now that you've been through my presentation. They still have a personal certificate, but it's signed by a self-signed root. So you have to have the WAS root to accept it. So it's no longer just a standalone self-signed certificate. It's actually a signed certificate.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's good to know.
Yes, that is good.
And there are no other questions on the audio side now.
Thank you, Marcella. We did get one more question in the group chat. Can root certificate generation be done by the WAS console?
Only as a self-sign, so it's sort of an odd question. If you root certificate normally implies it's from a certificate authority, and you'd have to have a certificate authority to create a root certificate. So other than the self-sign stuff, which we just talked about, no, you would probably get a root certificate from your trust authority.
Okay, thank you. And that's all the questions I see in the group chat. Are there any others on the phone, Marcella?
No, sir. There are none.
Okay, thank you. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, and we hope that you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Harold, for presenting today.
You're welcome.
This does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation, and you may disconnect your lines at this time.